This is Digital Story Podcast number 650, August 28th, 2018. Today's theme is The First Shoe Dropped, the Nikon Z7. I'm Derek Story. Since our last show, Nikon officially announced the Z6 and Z7 full-frame mirrorless camera bodies with three new Z-mount lenses. This is the news that many Nikon users have been waiting for, not to mention thousands of other curious photographers, myself included. So how does the new camera stack up to the competition? We'll take a closer look in today's TDS Photography Podcast. So the Nikon Z7, which with the adapter, the FTZ mount adapter, $3,546, and its little brother, the Nikon Z6, with the adapter, $2,146, have given us lots to think about over the last week. The bottom line for me is that these cameras represent a bold, yet delayed move by Nikon. And as a mirrorless shooter, there are many things I appreciate about this tandem. So let's take a closer look. I'm going to focus on the Z7 because it is the flagship model. The Z6 has many similarities, just a little bit less resolution. But let's focus on the Z7 because it's the one that's really going after Sony, right? So first, its attributes. So it has a 45.7 megapixel full frame format sensor. Yeah, that's pretty nice. And that's what it was all about, right? That full frame sensor in a Nikon mirrorless body. It has the X-Speed 6 image processing engine, does 4K video, 30 frames a second, 10-bit HDMI out, 493-point phase detect auto-focusing system, that should be quite interesting, in action, built-in 5-axis vibration reduction, in other words, image stabilization. It has a crazy 3.6 million dot electronic viewfinder with Nikkor optics. Also has a tilting LCD touchscreen, 3.2 inch, 2.1 million dot, 9 frames per second shooting, ISO 64 to 25,600. Has a nice little top plate LCD. And I guess it's, you know, crazier than I originally realized. It is a OLED dot matrix, top panel LCD. It looks nice. It reminds me of what I see on top of the Fuji GFX, as I recall. Good looking top plate LCD. And then, of course, it has the XQD card slot. We'll talk more about that. And then the kit that I talked about includes the FTZ mount adapter for Nikon shooters to use their existing Nikon lenses. Now, you can get it without the adapter for a little bit less, but either you're going to have to get the three lenses, the new Z mount lenses, or you're going to have to get the adapter. It doesn't do any good just to have the body because you need lenses one way or another. So I figure that most folks will probably go with the FTZ mount adapter. And in that kit, of course, as I said earlier, $3,546. So there are a lot of specs there. Let's talk a little bit about initially when I studied this camera, what I liked. And there are quite a few things. I mean, first of all, I guess I should just tell you that I think Nikon did a pretty good job with this. On the other hand, I'm going, they better have, because it's taken them so long to release this camera in terms of what's going on in the mirrorless world. But, you know, as you read the stuff online and you listen to the chatter about it, I tend to be on the side that thinks that Nikon did more things right than wrong. That doesn't mean that I don't have my nits with it. I do indeed. We're going to cover those in the show. But overall, this is a good camera. This is a very good camera, and I think it's going to please a lot of existing Nikon shooters. So what do I like? At the top of the list, I'm finally able to say that Nikon has a 5-axis sensor shift vibration reduction mechanism for 5 stops of stabilization, and that is regardless of the lens used. So guess what? Hey, they're joining the party of in-body image stabilization. yay. I mean, that alone for me, if I were a Nikon shooter or someone that's thinking about migrating to Nikon, that alone would make, you know, these two cameras interesting, just to have that in-body image stabilization. I mean, I have that on my Olympus cameras. I have that on my Pentax camera. I just can't see going back. I remember, you know, when I shot Canon and, you know, just the whole, is this lens stabilized or this one, or should I buy this one or spend the extra this for, oh my God, what a headache. And not to mention the ability to put just about any type of optic on the camera and have that stabilized. That is so cool. So happy to see it. This is at the top of my list of what I like about these two camera bodies. Finally, five stops of image stabilization built into the body. I'm also a big fan of how they handled the battery situation. So it does have the EN-EL-15B rechargeable lithium ion battery in the kit. And that 330 shots per charge, but that battery has in-camera charging supported. So you can use an external charger or you can use USB charging. I think on mirrorless cameras, I do like seeing the option for USB charging. It just feels like it gives us more versatility. Happy to see that. But then what they also did is they made the camera compatible with existing batteries that Nikon users have, the EN-EL-15 and EN-EL-15A batteries. Now, those don't support in-camera charging, but you can use them. And you know what? You haven't had in-camera charging anyway, so what the heck? So if you're an existing Nikon user, chances are you'll be able to use some of your batteries in this camera. I think that is good news. I'm also impressed with the 3.6 million dot electronic viewfinder. Nikon has talked a lot about this EVF. And basically what they have said is that, you know, our viewfinders, our optical viewfinders and our DSLRs are the best in the business. That's, you know, what they say. They are extremely good. I don't know which one is the best or not. I just know that when I look through a Nikon camera, it looks pretty darn good to me. And that they have tried to emulate that with the electronic viewfinder. In other words, they want DSLR users who move into mirrorless to have this great viewing experience when they look through the electronic viewfinder. They have done a lot of work on that. It has a special coating for easier cleaning. Pretty good stuff. And I commend them on this because I think they really understand their audience in that people that have been shooting Nikon have been used to a very good viewing experience. They cannot have this camera fall down on that front, and it has to provide a very good viewing experience through the electronic viewfinder as well. Now, that being said, they also have a touchscreen LCD, and they made it tilting. So I think that is another nice touch. Very good. So both the electronic viewfinder and the 3.2-inch, 2.1 million dot tilting touchscreen, nice stuff there, and I think both of those will be appreciated by Nikon shooters. And then finally, there's the Nikon quality factor for ruggedness and weather resistance and all that good stuff. It's a magnesium alloy chassis, and it is both dust and weather resistant, so you can work in harsh climates, inclement conditions. It is Nikon in that sense, right? It is a camera that you can have with you practically anywhere that you go. It should stand up to the abuse that professionals put their cameras through and keep taking great shots. So those are the things that really jumped out at me that I liked. There were a few things, however, that concerned me as I looked at this camera. And at the top of the list, and I hate to admit it, but I'm with a lot of other folks that are online, the single XQD memory card slot is a disappointment to me for two reasons. First of all, there's only one slot. This is a professional camera. This is a camera that you're spending way over $3,000 for, and it only has one memory card slot. And then my beef is, on top of that, is that it not only should it have two slots, but the second slot should be an SD slot. In other words, it's great to move us forward with the XQD memory card slot. Okay, yes, that is the future. I understand that. most of us do not have those cards, those readers, all that kind of stuff right now. So why not help us transition to the new removable memory world, same way that you are with lenses? You know, you have the adapter, so why not also the FTZ mount adapter? Why not also give us an SD card slot as a second slot so that we can use our existing cards as we build up our XQD, collection of cards and readers and all that kind of stuff? I just really feel like that. It was very short-sighted. It felt like kind of an Apple move. You know how Apple does that tough love thing where suddenly, you know, there'll be no, you know, whatever this anymore. No memory card slots at all. We're just getting rid of them. You don't need them. You know, no earphone jacks anymore. Bah, that was so last year. It feels a little bit like that. So, I think Nikon totally blew it on this front. Should be two card slots, and one of them should be SD. The other thing that, as an Olympus shooter, I look at this and I go, oh, no. Now, Sony users will not have this same kind of feeling that I have, I'm sure, because they're used to bigger cameras. But the overall size and weight with lenses mounted is substantial on these cameras. You know, and it's not a great savings over many DSLRs. So without the lens, the Z7, the dimensions are 5.3 inches by 4 inches by 2.7 inches with a weight of 1.29 pounds. Now, add one of the lenses. Let's take the 35mm f1.8. And if you look at the lenses lined up, they're all about the same size. They're all big. So the 35mm f1.8 is not a short lens, as you would hope that you could get away with. It is, how tall is it? It's about 3.4 inches long, and it weighs another 13 ounces. By the way, that lens will cost you $846, $846 for that lens. So, you know, you add all this up, 13 ounces here, 1.29 pounds there, 3.4 inches on the lens. You're starting to get, a lot of camera. Compared to, you know, the kit that I like to carry when I'm going mirrorless. Remember, I shoot both DSLR and mirrorless. When I'm going mirrorless, you know, I'm usually working with, you know, one of my Olympus bodies. I just got back from New York, as many of you know, who, follow me on Instagram and Facebook. In New York, I had the OMD EM5 Mark II. Yeah, I pulled that one out, you know. It's funny how sometimes you haven't shot with a camera for a while and you go, God, I'm really, really in the mood to use this camera. And so I took the EM5 Mark II, loved shooting with it. Oh, it was so nice to be shooting with it again. But, you know, most of the time I was shooting with the Panasonic 20mm, you know, f1.7, the Pancake zoom lens, the 14-42 EZ. Or, as a lot of you saw, I also had the 9mm body cap fisheye. So you take all three of those lenses and, you stack them on top of each other, and it's going to be about the height of just that 35mm f1.8. In other words, for someone that's spoiled like me with these very compact cameras that are high performance, you know, that is just a lot of camera to be carrying around, this Nikon Z6 and Z7. And then finally, it's expensive, okay? The Z7 is $200 more than the Sony A7R Mark III and $100 more than the Nikon D850. Its battery life is about half of what Sony offers. It's also, as I was just talking about, it's a bigger camera than the Sony A7R. So, it does have a few downsides. Now, in its defense, I would say that the Nikon has a little higher resolution, a little faster frame rate. So it does have some advantages too. It's not like the Sony camera beats it out on all the specs. It doesn't. If you look at a side-by-side comparison, the Nikon takes some of the specs and the Sony takes, you know, some of the others. What I am saying, though, that is with the Sony, you know, you get a much more developed lens library to choose from. Not only the Sony lenses, but also all the third-party lenses that work with the Sony A7R. And then, on top of that, the camera costs less. and it is a proven entity. I mean, it has evolved. It, you know, this is not the first Sony full frame. This is down the line, and they have made many improvements over that period of time. So, who is this for, and what is the bottom line on all of this? Well, these look like top-shelf cameras that should appeal to existing Nikon DSLR photographers. And I can see the Z6, for example, making an excellent second camera for D850 photographers, and the Z7, you know, becoming the flagship camera for a lot of photographers who, you know, are ready for, you know, mirrorless photography. That being said, I don't see many Sony shooters jumping ship over these cameras, and I doubt that many Olympus, Panasonic, or Fujifilm photographers will abandon those cameras either, unless they have a compelling need for full frame. And even if those photographers have a compelling need for full frame, then Nikon still has to compete with Sony for that audience, and in just a very short time, Canon as well, okay? I think that Nikon's sweet spot here is its existing community of photographers, because those photographers already have an investment in Nikon glass. From what I understand, the FTZ mount adapter performs very well. It's not like what we used to see in the early days where you had, you know, this horrible lag and, you know, terrible performance. This adapter, allegedly, I haven't tested it, this adapter allegedly performs quite well and will give a satisfactory experience while Nikon, you know, builds out its lens roadmap. And of course, right now you can get the 50 millimeter, the 35 millimeter, and the 24 to 70 millimeter in the Z mount. Again, that's a sizable investment where you could get off a lot less if you just wanted to, you know, kind of get started on this by maybe going with the Z6 at $2,100. Or, you know, if you want to jump in both feet, the Z7, if you want 45 megapixels of of capture joy, either way, that's a lot of money, and it'd be far more palatable if you had a lot of glass to go with those cameras, you know, out of the chute. So I think this is really an offering for Nikon photographers. It'll be interesting to see, though, if I'm wrong about that, and if they pull from different segments of the photography community. It's going to be fun to watch. The bottom line is I'm glad they developed this camera. It looks good, and it's going to be fun to see how this all plays out. Panasonic unveils the Lumix LX100 Mark II with a 17 megapixel sensor and touchscreen. And this is a report from Petapixel. I'll just read you a little bit about it, then I'll comment. Panasonic has announced the new Lumix LX100 II, a new high-end compact camera, the seventh in the LX series that succeeds the 12.8 megapixel LX100 with a 17 megapixel 4/3 sensor. On the front of the camera is a Leica 24 to 75 millimeter f1.7 to 2.8 lens, coupled with a relatively large sensor, at least for a compact camera, you know, micro 4/3 or 4/3. The camera is able to achieve shallow depth of field and beautiful bokeh. Photographers can directly control the aperture with the ring on the lens, which is suitable for things ranging from portraits to landscapes to macro, with a minimum focusing distance of just 1.2 inches. That's very nice, right? The built-in Live View viewfinder has 2.76 million dot resolution. The iSensor AF makes the camera start focusing as soon as you start looking through the LVF, the Live View finder. So this looks like, this is me now, this looks like a solid upgrade to the original LX100. My big disappointment, the thing that I was crossing my fingers on, remember, I essentially just reviewed this camera not long ago, the Leica version of it. I like the camera a lot. I took it to Hawaii, and I was shooting on Oahu with it, and I just really enjoyed carrying that camera around, having the only camera, the only lens, you know, because it's fixed mount lens, and getting great shots, shooting in RAW, shooting in JPEGs, the whole deal. The thing that that surprised me when I was shooting with it was that I missed the tilting LCD. It has a fixed back LCD. I hadn't realized how much I love tilting or articulated LCDs and how much I depended on them for a lot of my shooting, because I just don't shoot holding the camera straight up to my face, standing straight up like a soldier. I'm, you know, kind of all over the place here. So they didn't change that. They didn't add a tilting LCD as part of this upgrade. They upgraded the sensor. They upgraded, you know, a lot of aspects of the camera, but essentially the lens and then the fixed back LCD remain the same. For me, that's a deal breaker just because it's a sizable investment. And as much as I like the rest of the camera, I just can't go fixed back anymore. I just can't do it. I wish they would have changed that. I think they would have had a more appealing camera to more photographers had they added a tilting LCD. Okay, tomorrow, for those of you that listen to the podcast on Tuesday, tomorrow, Wednesday, I'm doing a free webinar with Rocky Nook, building a powerful digital darkroom in Apple Photos. So I'm doing this with Rocky Nook, and they wanted to sponsor a webinar where I talk about the digital darkroom aspect, because that's what the book, you know, the Apple Photos book for photographers, second edition, that's really what it focuses on, how you can use Apple Photos as your core application and then build in these different editing extensions that are just so fun and so cool to create and customize a digital darkroom. And that is exactly what I have done on my end. I have photos running on all my Macs and my iOS devices. I shoot, okay, I'll give you a perfect example. I just was shooting in New York. I was shooting with the Olympus OMD, and I was shooting with my iPhone 10, going kind of back and forth between the two cameras. Plus, I had a film camera. That one is not in this workflow, however. By the way, the film camera was a Nikon FG, which is just a really cool camera that I'm going to talk about someday, but not right now. Any rate, so the iPhone 10 images automatically through iCloud went into Photos, and then I would add my shots from the OMD into Photos. I mean, I would do a little bit of editing with the native tools in Photos for macOS, but more times than not, what I'm doing most of the time is that I pick out the shots that I want. I have my photo rating system that I developed that I talk about in the book that's really easy to use. One key for one star, two key for two star, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm going straight into Luminar as an editing extension and doing my editing. When I click Save Changes, the image is back in the Photos workflow, propagated through iCloud to all my other devices and ready to share. And I just absolutely love it. I just think it is so much fun. So we're going to do a one-hour webinar tomorrow, Wednesday, August 29th at 11 a.m. Pacific time. 11 a.m. Pacific time, Wednesday, August 29th. And I'm going to talk about just the digital darkroom aspect. So this is not like what I do on Nimble Classrooms, where we spend half a day and we go into all the different nooks and crannies and Photos for macOS. This is about the digital darkroom, and this is going to be about using Luminar, DxO Optics Pro, RAW Power, and some of these other great editing extensions, how I build that workflow, how easy it is, how fun it is, and how good the results are. That's what this is on Wednesday, August 29th. There's a link that where you can register in the show notes. Just, you know, register like right now if you're listening, or as soon as, if you're driving, don't register right now. Okay. If you're driving, don't register right now. Wait till you get to work and then register. But join me. Just hang out for an hour. I think you'll really enjoy it. And even if you've been to one of my Nimble classrooms, I think you'll enjoy this. And we're just going to talk about the fun stuff, right? The digital darkroom stuff. Wednesday, August 29th, 11 a.m. Pacific time. The link is in the show notes where you can register for this free webinar. All right, I have a few updates for you. I'm going to start out with a big thanks to Marshall Liu, Bill Armin, Bob McCarney, and Ed Spencer. What's so special about these guys? Well, they have contacted me about film camera donations. They have dug around in their closets. They have found, you know, cool cameras that they're not using anymore. I've already received some of the shipments from them, and some are about to get here. I've already started working on some of those cameras, you know, do a little refurbishing, try to film test them, you know, do all that kind of stuff. And because, you know, these guys donate these cameras, then I'm able to take it to the next level and still, you know, offer them at about the same prices that people would buy untested, dirty, maybe not operating properly cameras on eBay. You know, this is a cool thing, you know, because it costs money to film test. You know, it costs, well, basically, it costs over $20 a camera to film test it. That's not including my time. You know, it costs time to put it on the bench and clean it and add parts and things to it. You know, all this stuff takes time. These donations allow me to make great cameras so that they can get into film photography. Big thanks to Marshall, Bill, Bob, and Ed, and all the other folks who have donated in the past. Your donations are being put to good use. I also want to thank all of our Inner Circle members. You know, I have to tell you guys, you know, I know I mention you every week on the podcast. I know I send out, you know, a note or two every month on the Patreon site. I just want you to understand, you know, how valuable you are, you know, to this community and how important, you know, your contributions are to keeping this podcast on the air and to, you know, allow me to do all the other things that I'm doing for the photography community through the digital story and the analog story. So, you know, just a big thanks to you. Take a lot of pride. I hope you take a lot of pride in your support and being an Inner Circle member. And always, I'll see you on Patreon. Always want to tip my hat to you right here on the show. If you're interested in becoming a supporter of this show, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. It's very important. And, you know, these folks that are doing this, you know, they are the folks that really help keep this show on the air. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, the makers of all sorts of wonderful surfaces, including Polar Luster Metallic, which I'm addicted to, as you know by now. But also, you know, just about everything else. Like this week, I actually made myself print something different than Polar Luster Metallic. I did some more fine art cards. I shot a lot of what I consider iconic stuff in New York, and I wanted to have a set of New York fine art cards. I picked out 6 shots, and I'm using more of a matte surface for those. And I just have to tell you, it's a lot of fun. And having that set of 6 cards from, you know, this recent visit to New York, I don't know. It just feels really good. It's almost like the whole trip just comes in focus. Here are the 6 shots that I think represent that last visit and in a lot of ways represent the things of New York that we think about. To have them on this beautiful Red River paper and these wonderful envelopes and able to share with people, I guess it's the icing on the cake for me when I do these adventures. So anyway, big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting the site. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that's going to do it for me this week. It's good to be back in the studio, you know, recording here in my room that doesn't have all sorts of background noise and things happening. I hope you enjoyed the interview I did last week with Scott in spite of all that activity. Working on some great stuff for next week. Come back and join me next Tuesday. Stop by for the free webinar tomorrow. Just appreciate everything that you do to help keep this community vibrant. See you next week. Bye-bye now.